You are listening to National Security Law Today.
Welcome to National Security Law Today, the podcast of the ABA's Standing Committee on Law and National Security. I'm Elisa Poteet. We are back with an all-new episode, the third in our series on science fiction as a cautionary tale for national security, and with a short news roundup as usual. And today I have an all-fresh, brand-new, wonderful guest, the amazing Sunita Patel. Sunita, thanks for coming in. Great to have you.
Thanks so much, Elisa, for having me. I wouldn't miss this opportunity to talk about security and sci-fi.
It's like a nerd convention every time. It's just a blast. Sunita has a long history of providing legal and policy advice on information protection and security in its many forms. Now, she currently serves as Senior Assistant General Counsel for Product Security at Micron. By the way, that's a chip company. And previously held roles at the Office of National Cyber Director at the White House, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security. And what's interesting is, of course, she hails from the always warm and tidy Orange County, California. She designs her own clothes. I've seen them. They are amazing. And she is a mom to two digital native kids. And of course, like everybody who comes on this cast, she is here most assuredly in her individual and always well-dressed capacity. So you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Total Recall. Now, usually we talk about books and there's a book behind this, but generally, what would you say this movie is about?
Okay, Elisa, I have to say, what is this movie not about? It's about AI, it's about chips, it's about virtual reality, data, climate issues, the role of government, private sector, privacy, espionage, the human existence. It's about everything. I thought I'd give a recap of it because I actually watched the movie recently. In a nutshell, it was made in 1990 and tells the story of Douglas Quaid, who is played by the famous Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of my very, very favorite actors. The plot is wild. The year is 2084. Mars was colonized and is being ruled by an evil governor. And Quaid, I'm going to qualify him as good Quaid, is living on Earth. But he's a bored construction worker who's had recurring dreams of being on Mars. And he ends up going to a company called Recall Incorporated that offers vacations and adventures via an implanted memory. So good Quaid buys the package of being a secret agent on Mars, but something goes wrong during the procedure before the chip is actually implanted. And he wakes up realizing he was the governor's secret agent in the past. The company thinks that he is in fact a real agent who has had his memory wiped by the governor. So they try to wipe his memory again and send him home. The rest of the movie is about good Quaid's fight with the governor's agents, his quest to help the resistance on Mars, and his efforts to escape the governor from returning him to his bad Quaid self. So I got to tell you, I absolutely loved this movie, loved rewatching it. I watched the remake of it because it just brings up so many issues that we are dealing with today.
It's a lot of issues. You mentioned climate and you mentioned privatization. But it wasn't just privatization, it was control of essential things, in this case, air. The ability to breathe was held by a private company and apparently was unnecessary, but they had created a situation where the residents of Mars were highly dependent on the company because they were holding back the available and naturally occurring oxygen. Now, let's go into what I know you thought was one of the more interesting national security issues, but we keep hearing about Elon Musk's Neuralink when we hear about neurotechnologies. And this thing that they put in his brain so he could experience a vacation as part of a memory without actually going anywhere because he, like a lot of people, didn't have money. What would you say are some of the hazards of this technology other than some of those super obvious things?
So I actually think it might be helpful to first understand what is Neuralink for those of our listeners that don't know it. It's a type of brain-computer interface, or BCI for short, which is a computer system that acquires brain signals, analyzes them, and translates them into commands that are then relayed to an external device for action. But what's important to note is that this technology has been used in the medical arena for a number of years already. And actually, I was chatting with my husband about this, and he gave me the example of an externally worn EEG to help individuals have their brain signals read and allows them to move certain limbs when they can't move those limbs. So it's been around for a while. But when I think about Elon Musk's Neuralink technology, I think there definitely are certain hazards that are present, particularly because this proposal is to have BCI that is embedded in the brain, right? So we're talking a different context here. A few thoughts come to mind after watching Total Recall and also reading the novelette that this was based off of. And it's, how do we ensure that the implant won't cause severe unintended consequences to brain functioning or even the rest of the body? Right? How do we know this? We have to do a good amount of research to be able to extrapolate that type of information. How do we protect a person's privacy when using this technology and ensure that only information needed to achieve the consented upon purpose? How do we make sure that companies don't do what Recall thought of doing? And that being arbitrarily deciding to erase an existing memory in order to make space for the memory being purchased. I mean, I can kind of go on and on about what these movies made me think of and what Elon Musk's Neuralink is making me think of.
Let's walk through some of the issues before we get into sort of the biomedical ethics issues, which obviously are substantial. Let's start from the very beginning. The semiconductor industry is going to play a role in this technology, obviously very significant. Is that industry, now that you've got a lot of experience dealing with it, are they ready to produce these types of chips? And if we decide that this technology should move forward, have we really made a decision as a society that this is a good thing?
From what I know so far, and I have to caveat that I joined Micron back in January, so my experience within the industry is still developing. But having worked with the semiconductor industry on things like the Chips and Science Act and having worked at the White House on the same, I do know that the semiconductor industry continues to attract and partner with brilliant researchers, engineers, and other professionals that are just constantly thinking about what the market needs in order to develop chips with the capability to deliver those needs, right? We can see this happening with AI right now and the pivoting of the semiconductor industry to make the amount of memory storage and GPU chips that are enabling artificial intelligence globally at scale. Right now, what I can't say is whether the semiconductor industry is poised to produce the types of chips that are necessary for the types of uses contemplated for Neuralink. And those uses could be broad, as if you keep on watching the sci-fi movies, there's a lot of different uses for this type of technology. But I can't say if the industry is poised for it because right now we just don't have enough information. There are lots of elements of BCI that we need to know about, like, what are society's acceptable uses? What is the scale? What's the application of AI in relation to BCI? What's the power that's needed? What's the source of that power that is needed? Is it external or internal? What sort of memory is needed for neuro data? What are the storage needs for data that comes from the brain? Even if we are able to sort of silo the type of neuro data we need for a particular use case, can the infrastructure support that? There's just too much ambiguity right now to state for sure whether the industry can produce the chips at scale.
One of the things that you have to think about with any chip, with any sort of anything that's digital, is the cybersecurity and reaching into the brain here becomes, you know, we think of patches coming through all the time. How many did Apple send out this week? Five, six?
Yeah.
I mean, it's every time I stood up, there was another patch that made its way through. I mean, how would this work? And then have we thought about how we would protect the content of the brain, our thoughts, from being available to the outside? And I wonder, you know, would that even be possible if these chips are designed to have output in one direction? Could they have output just in terms of allowing us to control our bodies when we've lost our ability to do so? Or would the output also include communication systems that could be absorbed by an outside entity? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think first we have to recognize that it is not one type of chip that will enable a system or allow a use to or capability to be performed. There's a whole bunch of different types of chips that are necessary to enable the digital infrastructure today. But honestly, the cybersecurity of this technology, it's an issue that truly plagues me and one that I've been thinking about We've seen in the last decade the damage that threat actors can do using digital devices that we can touch with our hands, right? We can touch a computer, we can touch our phones, and threat actors have been targeting these things. In the last few years, we've focused our efforts to develop reactive and proactive policies and processes that enable us to be aware of the tactics, mitigate against effects from the incidents, and allow systems to recover quickly so that they can function as intended. But as I was watching Total Recall and The Matrix, I wondered whether things like the National Cybersecurity Strategy are right for a setting like Neuralink. Right now, a key part of proactive cybersecurity is something called secure by design. CISA has great guidance on what is secure by design, and secure by design of the software. Are we talking about secure by design of the chips, all the various types of chips, to make sure that, again, the system is performing the function that society wants it to perform and is not at risk of performing another use that we haven't agreed upon because threat actors are out there and they want to manipulate these things?
Yes. And secure by design sometimes bumps up against something like return on investment and shareholder value. And there is considerable pressure, I think, and I'm going to throw this out to you as part of our convo, though, which is there's tremendous pressure on corporations to push out products in cyberspace. And secure by design is great until there's a real push on private industry side. And so there's always this tension, you know, is the government overregulating? And to the extent that they're secure by design, you depend on honest brokers in a company to show that it's secure by design, not that it's secure enough to hit the market, right? Let's go back to the sort of idea of thoughts and brain contents being available through BCI. So what are your thoughts about that?
First, we need to know what is the brain data that is going to be made available? How is that brain data that, again, minimization principles should apply here, because this brain data is very personal data related to an individual. How do we ensure that the right amount of data is collected and tailored for the particular end use? There are so many things that I'm thinking about in terms of just how is even the data being collected? What medical procedures are we using to collect it in the first instance, to then share it, to then deliver it? What's being done with it afterwards? Who is it being made available to? How do we protect it under existing regimes, right? Existing laws. We don't have a comprehensive privacy legislation. We do have GDPR. The United States has HIPAA. The United States has many laws related to information of children. Does this brain data that we as a society decided should be collected outside of the body, does that protection of that data fall under the existing laws? Or do we need something new?
It's an interesting question. And you can imagine that just like we're looking with AI models right now, that early participants in any of this would be used to feed models. A lot of the data outcoming would be part of the ongoing science. And so it would be interesting to see how far any consent to that could actually go when we're not aware at this point in time how much could be acquired.
No, that's very true. And actually, it's making me think of something else that you and I talked about. And it's the potential use case for this, which I think bears mentioning in light of consent. So I think I mentioned to you that I have one very deeply personal use case where this type of technology could be valuable. A family member has Parkinson's disease, which affects their motor system. This family member has Alzheimer's, which affects his memory and behavior. And he also has recently had a stroke, which thankfully has not resulted in permanent physical issues. But what could this technology do for him and others with similar, either temporary or permanent ailments? It might enable them to function to their full physical and mental potential to ultimately connect with loved ones. But do we, as Recall Incorporated advertised the package of an ego trip, want to develop technology that allows one to vacation from yourself or that risks you becoming someone else? And that that could be a national security risk right there, right? That's what happened also in the movie. Good Quaid stuck around at the end of the movie, not Bad Quaid. Bad Quaid was the real person before all of the mind erasing. Can an individual that has these sort of mental issues truly be said to have consented to receive certain treatment that is enabled by this technology? Could an individual that has these issues be said to have consented to the use of certain information for other purposes, for maybe provision to a third party if it enables further research to help individuals with medical issues? What does consent look like in this situation? So, and because I think nobody can argue with the use case of trying to help a family member with their full physical capabilities, right? But I think there are so many risks to truly trying to understand what is the information that is obtained from the brain to support that purpose. We don't know if the information could be more than what is needed, which then is incumbent upon a company to sort of parse through and figure out what is the valuable bit and what is the invaluable bit. Does the person consent to that in the first instance? Are they able to?
Yeah. And I guess the other question that comes to mind as I'm listening to you right now is, even if they give some sort of expansive consent and we discover that there's something else being acquired by this technology that they could not have consented to. And I'm trying, my imagination is going to be limited by what we know, and that's always a bad situation. But what is the meaning of consent when we don't really even topographically have any idea what would come out of this technology in the long term? And also, you talk about the information going to the company. Now, I think there is definitely a growing sentiment in the United States, and I know for a fact in Europe, that, you know, there's not a lot of trust in these tech companies. And by that, I mean the Silicon Valley tech companies. They're deemed to be sort of in their own ecosystem, you know, tone deaf to what goes on in the rest of the world. And is that who you want receiving the information? And that may be a conversation we can have for another day. Like, who should be receiving that? Should it be some sort of committee with accountability, multidiscipline committee? Should it have some sort of ethics overlay? Should it be 50%? People with the ability to consider shifting topography and ethics, people with that level of talent, what should it actually, should humans, should AI play a role in this? So I think it becomes incredibly complicated, and our current brains, I think, are very limited in our ability to conceptualize where this is going. I do want to say one thing. You mentioned some data privacy regimes. There is apparently a bill kicking around right now for an overarching data privacy. We're watching that closely. We know there have been 40 plus hearings. It hasn't been signed as of our recording, but my best intelligence is that it may be today, of all things, and it may be advancing. And so just understand, if that happens, listeners, that it hasn't happened yet.
Lisa, can I add one point?
Please. Oh, always.
Yeah. You know, these are really complicated topics, particularly in data security, privacy, and the implications for a human being, for the information. We are talking about safety and trust and security in the context of AI right now. You know, my personal opinion is that there is focus to these types of topics of what are the ethical concerns, what are the end uses, how does this impact existing society, how will it impact society of tomorrow, how does it impact different categories of individuals out there. We should be building this type of technology into those discussions, right? So many times there's a debate on whether law and policy should be technology agnostic. And then there are times where we think law and policy should not be technology agnostic, because there are very salient situations where technology is being used for very bad harms. I think we need to have some very smart people talking about this and building it into existing conversations, because Neuralink is here. And the technology is going to move fast. And Elon Musk has already stated that he wants to scale this, right? So we need to catch up.
All right. Well, Sunita, we could talk forever on this. Yeah. And you are super fun. And I knew it the first time I met you. So now it is time, however, to switch to national security news. CISI, that is the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, has passed its version of the Fiscal 2025 Intelligence Authorization Act. That means that the House sometimes looks like the bar scene in Star Wars, meaning the House of Representatives, in this case, HPSI, will have to work with the Senate committee to reconcile the two authorizations. No squabbling, no mention of anyone's appearance. We hope they get through it. All right. ISIS is leveraging AI to send out its poisonous messages, according to Site Intelligence Group. Apparently, some of their videos have been made to resemble Al Jazeera news broadcasts. And this is not good because they're going to be able to amplify their message through this use. And Rita Katz, who's the co-founder of Site Intelligence Group, has expressed alarm. She said this is a game changer for ISIS, and it's going to be a quick way for them to spread and disseminate their bloody attacks to reach almost every corner of the world. Let me add, more than 50,000 foreign fighters, and that's probably less than half, entered theater after being radicalized. All right, President Biden has expressed outrage at the arrest warrant for Israeli PM Netanyahu by the ICC, the International Criminal Court. Remember, Israel is not a signatory now. They did not sign the Rome Treaty. However, the ICJ, and by the way, that is a United Nations thing. There's a very big difference here, has ordered an end to Israel's incursion into Rafah. Now, the ICJ can, in principle, deal with cases brought by any state. The ICC's jurisdiction is considerably more limited. It covers crimes that were committed in the territory of or by nationals of one of the 124 member states to the signatories to the Rome Statute. And Israel, you might remember, provided consent to resolve disputes that are related to the Genocide Convention before the ICJ when it signed a treaty in 1950, agreeing to take part in this legal process. So, what's going to happen? And the administration has indicated it would support sanctions against the ICC for this action. Now, lest we should make anybody look bad here, let me say what is in the Washington Post today. Mark Thiessen, who, you know, he's a Republican, but he points out that the ICJ has never indicted Iran's supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, or Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad, you know, gassed his own people horrifyingly, but has targeted Netanyahu, whom he characterizes as a democratic leader with an impartial justice system that holds its own leaders to account. And at the same time, Spain, Ireland, and Norway have said they would recognize a Palestinian state. All right. Iranian TV showed throngs of mourners trailing the cortege of President Raisi as his body moved through the streets. However, just a town or so over from Tehran, you could find on many international broadcasts and on social media that there were fireworks and celebrations. The people were cheering in the street. And I suspect that it's very true that happened. It continues to appear that the supreme leader's son would now be the chosen candidate for the Islamic Republic, a theocracy that will mean he will run unopposed, just like Raisi did in the last election. Oh, dear, do I fear for the decent, beautiful, and intelligent people of Iran who don't deserve this. Publisher Wiley, the august publisher Wiley, has shuttered 19 scientific journals after retracting over 11,000 sham papers, many of which came from so-called paper mills that sell fictive research, sometimes written by AI.
Oh, come on.
There you go. And they publish these articles to researchers who then publish them in peer-reviewed articles. By the way, the peers in these journals, it turns out, have often been placed there by the sham groups.
What is real?
All right. And if you have concerns that reliance on a single billionaire whose mercurial behavior, ketamine ingestions, and ranting posts that retaliate for any perceived injury inflicted, however small, Elon Musk is deeper into the national security of the U.S. again. After SpaceX launched the National Reconnaissance Office's first batch of next-gen spy satellites, the NRO, for you newbies out there, designs and operates U.S. government surveillance and intelligence satellites. Sunita, I know you're gasping right now.
Procurement of the vehicle for security.
Yes. All right. The Washington Post reports that, you know, we haven't taken enough of a body blow over this whole Boeing debacle, but the Post reports that Russia's jamming of the guidance systems of modern Western weapons sent to Ukraine, including the Excalibur GPS guided artillery shells and high mobility artillery rocket systems, or HIMARS, HIMARS, however you want to pronounce it, which can fire some U.S.-made rockets with a range of up to 50 miles, has eroded Ukraine's ability to defend its territory and has left officials in Kyiv urgently seeking help from the Pentagon. They need a patch. Somebody needs to send a patch to upgrade something with these arms manufacturers. Now, importantly, Lamborghini is recalling 2,100 of its top-selling Urus SUVs, which start at more than 200,000, because the hood may fly open over certain speeds. No, that's not national security news, but it's fun. It's a fun morsel. It's funner for those now feeling schadenfreude about Lamborghini drivers. I am not one of them. I will not buy a Lamborghini. Sunita, your thoughts on the Lamborghini?
I'm wondering if it has the same radio system that's in Tesla cars that was hacked recently.
You think it's a hack, the hood hack. It's a hood hack?
It could be a hood hack.
My mother, apparently, she once was driving over the George Washington Bridge and her hood popped up. And she continued to drive looking under the little, you know, crescent under the hood. And as she did, the New Yorkers were all honking and putting their hands out of their cars and saying, "Lady, your hood's up." And she was like, "Thank you. I can't tell."
You should have told her to put a towel over it. It'll fix everything.
A wet towel.
A wet towel.
The views expressed on National Security Law Today have not been approved by the House of Delegates or the Board of Governors of the American Bar Association, and this recording should not be construed as representing ABA policy.